Lifeway Leadership Podcast Network.
You're listening to the newchurches.com Q&A podcast. New Churches is an online hub for the mission of church multiplication. Here you'll find the resources and training you need to get started, as well as a community of church planting and multi-site experts to help you thrive. My name is Daniel Lim, and I'm here with Ed Stetzer.
And I am indeed here with Daniel Lim. Hello. Hello. Sorry. All right. I was distracted for a minute, but I'm not distracted anymore.
Distracted by my good looks, right? So.
Wow. That. Hopefully you'll edit that out, but okay, moving on now.
Oh, man. Okay. Hey, so on episode 443, we talked about church planting in Canada. We talked a little bit about cities and the whole idea of it just being sometimes cost prohibitive to live directly in the city if you're planting in the city. So we be sure to listen to episode 443, especially if you haven't yet, because that'll give us some good background for this for today's episode. But for today's episode, what we're going to be talking about is continuing on that conversation about a city approach to church planting. So Ed, because planting in cities, like we talked about earlier, whether it's a Canadian city or another one, is typically more expensive. Like, it's more expensive to live in the city than the suburb in most growing areas. What do you think the way that we plant within a city needs to look different than the way, than just general church planting advice we give anyway?
Well, it appears so. It appears that some of the ideas, like if you're in a nice suburban community, you know, vast stretches of apartments and houses, single family homes, you know, and people are moving in all the time, there's often a sense that you can follow what has been the, I hate to call it traditional, but is a bit of a traditional model where, you know, you send out some mailers, you start a core group, send out some mailers, you do three preview services and you launch. It seems that there's not going to be as often the space for something like that. There's not going to be the availability to actually communicate with a large number of people through, you know, the same way to get mail, et cetera, et cetera. So I would say that you're going to have to kind of, you know, go a little old school, probably more so. And what you would do is instead of thinking, all right, here's the, you know, we're going to start a core group, we're going to send out mailers, we're going to do whatever. You might say, we're going to begin in meeting in when we have four faithful families. It's kind of an old school church planting model that Larry Lewis talked about. We get four faithful families and we'll start meeting together. And so it might start, the launch might not be, you might still have a public opening, but it might not be this big attendance thing. A lot of times it depends on the city. When Passion City's church was started in Atlanta, they had plenty of people show up. Of course, that was Louis Giglio, not you.
Yeah.
but what I would say is you can find all of the elements. They just might have to be refined a little bit in a church context.
That's really helpful, Ed. So when you think about planting in a city, and one of the things about cities compared to particular areas of a suburb is if you're in a suburb, it's, you know, there's that planned community and houses are there. There might not be multi housing developments right in that area. There might be, but it might just be everything's kind of around the same price. And you have, you might not have as big of a income disparity within the suburbs as you might have within the city context. So when you think about that city context and you have like the uber wealthy, and then you also have kind of, you know, dual income, no kid families as well. And maybe the one kid family, not a lot of young families typically because of the context around that. And then you also have this idea of single professionals, and then all the way down socioeconomically, the down and out, right? The down and out who might be living there because of a shelter or this, that, or the other. And the whole idea of gentrification, as a church planner going into a city, do you think it's helpful? And I know we're not necessarily talking about the homogeneous unit principle, but do you think it's helpful to say, hey, this is a socioeconomic group that we are reaching?
What you are talking about the homogeneous unit principle. You just don't want to use the word because some people have mischaracterized it and caricatured it in ways that aren't helpful. I mean, here's the facts. In fact, if McGavern had called this the homogeneous unit observation, we wouldn't be having any controversy about it. Because the observation is, the fact of the matter is that people prefer to come to Christ without crossing social, economic, you know, racial barriers. It just is what it is. You know, Spanish speaking, Latino is most likely to come to Christ in that setting. This is not rocket science. And so to make that into some sort of attack on the homogeneity principle. Okay, so here's the challenge. You know, with what Dahadi calls, you know, density and diversity, that's the urban context, right? So Dahadi Lewis, sorry. So you've got density and diversity. And if that's the case, your diversity is right there in front of you and is often kind of mixed in its setting at a much level. So, you know, much different level. So we're, if you live in, you know, where I used to live in Hendersonville, Tennessee, it was much more homogenous, therefore much easier to appeal. Okay. I use that word intentionally. The best use of the word would be to reach people who were similar to one another. That's just the observation. Now, in a city, you got density and diversity right next to each other. So, you know, how do you reach that homeless person next to that millionaire living in the condo, next to that first generation immigrant, you know, next to that person who goes to the symphony? And maybe they're the same person sometimes, you know? So I think that part of the challenge is that a lot of people who want to say, oh, you know, this is terrible, we shouldn't think about reaching a segment of people that's blank, yet their church just goes that direction. You know, again, I'm in a Intermittent Moody church. We have 70 countries represented there, but there is still commonality there. We're a traditional church. People who go to our church of different ethnic backgrounds love traditional church. That's, if you don't love traditional church, Moody Church is not going to be the church you flock to. So there are commonalities. Sometimes commonalities can even cross, and you say, we might say the gospel is a commonality across all barriers. It does, but not necessarily for unchurched people who don't know the gospel. So that's where, again, where it gets tricky is how do you, you know, can you focus on three or four kinds of groups? I don't know. But I think ultimately you reach your neighborhood, you're going to be reaching across more barriers, far more barriers than you would if you were doing this in a more typical church planning location, suburban, whatever. I'm not saying it's right. I'm just saying it is.
Okay. So if you're saying it is, then are you saying that church planners should actually go in with that in mind?
Yeah, I mean, with
the homogeneous unit principle in mind, and be like,
mind is a good way to put it. I would say that a church planner shouldn't go in. What I would say don't do is to go into a context and say, I'm going to reach the young, white, urban, you know, professionals who are moving into a gentrified neighborhood.
Yeah, never put that in your prospectus.
Yeah, well, I think, but even if you're doing it like mentally in your head, it's very not James. It's very not the Epistle of James.
Yeah.
So we really want to keep in mind that the Bible actually teaches us not to do things that are favoring the rich over the poor. But I would recognize. I think there's just a reality and a maturity to recognize that if you are a recent seminary graduate, young couple moving, you're probably going to attract people like that. And that long-term tenured community that was there, whether it's Latino or African-American or Polish for that matter, they're not going to connect with you as naturally, but reach out anyway. Don't be exclusive, but recognize, and here's the key, but recognize that you're probably are going to draw from a particular grouping. And as such, you can intentionally seek to not let that group be the only group that you engage. That's what I would say, is be intentional.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. But honestly, Ed, I think we could do this from a passive approach or an active approach, right? So I agree with you, young family going in. I mean, even for me at my church, it's like, I know the average age of our church is going to be going down because that's right. Who I am, right? And so I know that that's happening. And for me personally, I mean, that's a passive approach. Actively, I'm working with our next gen team directly to say, okay, what are ways that we can, knowing that this shift is going to happen, what are ways that we can intentionally move toward this and be more welcoming? So within a church planting context, right, there is obviously the passive approach of this is who we are, this is who we connect with. But then there's also the flip side. Do you think they should be active to say, okay, because we are in this neighborhood And yes, it's going to be easy to attract these people to our launch team. But because we're in this neighborhood and because of the density and diversity, we need to actively have this person, this type of person on our launch team and this type of person on our launch team so that we are well representing who we are reaching. You know, obviously people will come, you know, they'll come if they come, but then there's that different approach of actually seeking out and saying, we are not going to launch until we have this.
Yeah, I guess that I wouldn't be offended by that idea. I wouldn't be think it's a terrible idea. Here's the question I would have is that I wouldn't want you to say, if you're moving into a community that says disproportionately African-American, that is engaging in African-American churches, I would want you to be careful that sometimes you might want to listen to the local churches that may be African-American, Latino, or if maybe you're African-American or Latino, but to listen and see what's God already doing there and not seek to disrupt that. But I would say, yeah, I would try to, would I say I wouldn't launch a church until I had a certain percentage of diversity? Probably not, because what you may find is that the people that you attract at first are more like you, but then you can continue to cast a vision to reach people who are not like you. So you can actually possibly move them, the congregation, into a greater sense of diversity. But if you start from the beginning, that's good. So start from the beginning with that. But then who comes and who shows up, if that's not as diverse as you had hoped, then keep working at it. Keep intentionally, strategically building a more diverse community as you go. Don't say, well, you know, what, we're a failure. We can't start until we have this percentage. I mean, I'd want to see some your diversity reflect your community from the beginning, but I would also recognize that I want to just keep going and keep working towards it, not giving up because I haven't yet seen it.
Yeah, that's helpful. That's helpful. Well, thanks again for listening to the newchurches.com Q&A podcast. If you haven't left a question yet, be sure to do that. Either way, Ed and I and Todd and I, we're just going to keep on talking about planting, multi-site, and multiplication. But if you have a question, we would love to answer it. Just go to speakpipe.com/newchurches if you're on your mobile device. Or if you're on your computer, go to newchurches.com, hit the sidebar on the right, and send that question in. And one more thing, be sure to listen to the One Thing podcast with our friends Scott Sanders and Derek Hanna. They're a part of the Lifeway Leadership Podcast Network family, and recently they've talked about growth barriers, handing off ministries, and knowing when to say goodbye. Just look up the One Thing on your favorite podcasting app and start today. Thanks again.